Those who serve in the U.S. military live lives that are very different from most of us in the civilian world. Today, we'll explore the creative work of veterans as they draw upon their military experiences. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, I'll talk with poet Hugh Martin, who spent 6 years in the Army National Guard and 11 months in Iraq. I'll talk with Randy Brown, who writes creative nonfiction. He grew up in an Air Force family and is retired with 20 years of military experience. And I'll talk with singer-songwriter Lem Genovese, who served for 20 years in the U.S. Army and Iowa Army National Guard. He served in Vietnam and the Gulf War. Join our conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. The most recent edition of the Iowa Review, the University of Iowa's literary magazine, featured work, really amazing work, that came entirely from veterans. And that inspired us to seek out other veterans from Iowa who are creating artwork by drawing on their military experience. Later this hour, I'll talk with Randy Brown, who blogs at redbullrising.com and writes creative nonfiction. He grew up in an Air Force family and is retired with 20 years of military experience. I'll also talk with singer-songwriter Lem Genovese, who served for 20 years in the U.S. Army and Iowa Army National Guard. He served in Vietnam and the Gulf War. But first, poet Hugh Martin. He spent 6 years in the Army National Guard and 11 months in Iraq. His work is featured in this issue of the Iowa Review, and he is the Jeff Charlotte Memorial Award winner from the Iowa Review. He just published a full-length poetry collection called The Stick Soldiers, and he's on the line with us today from Oakland, California. Hello, Hugh.
Hi, Charity. How are you doing?
Good. Thank you so much for being here today.
Yeah, glad to be here. Thanks.
And you're originally from Ohio, right?
Yeah, that's right.
How old were you when you entered the military?
I joined when I was 17, so it would have been in the middle of my junior year of high school. But I joined when I actually signed on. It was summer, and it was about 4 months before 9/11.
4 months before 9/11. So the military changed pretty dramatically between the time that you signed up and the time that you served, really.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I joined, you know, even if you joined before the day before 9/11, obviously you had different goals, maybe being in the military. But, of course, after the second plane hit, I guess, things changed. So.
And you did serve 11 months in Iraq. When was that?
Pretty much all of 2004. So.
Have you always been interested in writing?
Yeah, I wrote. Well, I've been an avid reader growing up, you know, ever since maybe grade school, sixth, seventh grade. And then in high school, I just wrote for the school newspaper and tried to write my own stories and fiction and things like that. But I didn't really get into poetry until after coming back from Iraq and then just kind of taking a creative writing class for fun in undergrad. So, and then that kind of sparked the interest in poetry, and that's how I got into that. But yeah, I've always been a reader and kind of an amateur writer, I guess. But
while you were in the service, did you spend time writing?
We did have the Ohio National Guard had some publications, and I was a person who would write articles about our unit sometimes and send those in. But otherwise, you know, there were just a few articles I did, but I kept a journal. While I was in Iraq, I tried to be pretty disciplined about it, and even if I couldn't write in it every day, whenever I had some downtime, I'd go, I'd write something about each day or whatever happened each day. So I pretty much, I had a few hundred pages of journal, but nothing, you know, no poetry or fiction or anything like creative, just kind of writing down what happened, journaling, things like that.
So a lot of the poems that are featured in the Iowa Review draw on your experience while you were serving. How did you go through that process? Did you write those poems based on memory, or did you go back to your journals?
No, I think it's definitely a little bit of both. Most of these poems, I'd say, they're based on very vivid memories I've had. But I think whenever I'm writing something, I will sometimes go back and look in my journal, and that's not because I want to make sure I've written exactly what's happened or make sure I have everything right. It's usually just to kind of refresh my memory and think about the images that I might have written down in the journal or the what I was feeling or thinking at the time. But really, when you're writing, you know, when you're writing a poem, obviously you're just kind of doing what the poem needs to do, and letting it kind of take itself in whatever direction it needs to go. The integrity is always to the poem, not to the experience. But the poem can be true to the experience, even though sometimes I'll leave out certain things that happened or leave out certain people I know or characters just because they aren't needed. So, but honestly, for the most part, I do just kind of write off an image or write off a memory and take the poem from there.
Could you read your poem, Foot Patrol, that was featured in the Iowa Review for us?
Yes. Foot Patrol. The blue bruise under his eye is like the skin of a cold plum. Blood dries beneath his nose as we listen to the eucalyptus scratch the violet sky in the dusk wind. My platoon stands with our rifles in the day's leftover exhaust smoke settled in the valley. The Iraqi sergeant smashed this man's face twice with the wooden butt of his Kalashnikov. He swung it with both hands like a tennis racket. The man had been seen digging beside the long road into Jalula. The young boy who sells blocks of ice pushes his red cart home, waves, "Mister, good night." When the echo of his creaking cart dissolves down the alley, in the deep silence, my body says there could be a blast, enormous in this dusky, muted night. But we are moving for a foot patrol where I have no choice but to press my feet softly on that road of earth.
That's Hugh Martin reading his poem, Foot Patrol. Hugh, have you shown your work to other veterans that you served with?
I'll be honest, you know, the guy that came back with my platoon, you know, most of them are big readers, especially, you know, they never touch poetry, as poetry kind of, it's not widely read much, you know, in the States. But I have had a few contact me and said, you know, they like certain poems, but that's pretty much it. So I really don't want to shove it in their face, tell them to read it, you know, because they've been there and they don't really need to, I guess. But, yeah, the ones who contacted me, which then maybe just one or two of my friends, they said they liked it. They remember some of the events that I'm talking about. But, so not much, really. So I'm kind of, I'll wait till they, you know, if they want to read it more, then they can talk to me. But
do you write with an audience in mind?
No, I really don't. I just, I try to straddle that line of thinking, you know, what kind of terminology or what kind of, things am I saying in the poem that might be very foreign or confusing or just, that civilians might not know about, especially using military jargon or vernacular and acronyms. But I also don't want to make it too explicit where I'm kind of writing for strictly a civilian audience and kind of shoveling it on or really explicitly explaining something. So I try to write just for an audience that, you know, I don't think about it much, but I want it to be read by someone who served and someone who was just a civilian and didn't serve, and to be enjoyed by both people. And hopefully they see the humanity in the poems and they can both get something out of it. But I don't really worry about if a civilian's going to read it or a veteran's going to read it. I try to kind of just stay in the middle somewhere and keep it objective in a way. So,
you write about some very ugly things. You write about a little girl who's been injured because she was in the wrong place at the wrong time. And I wonder, when you write about these things, does it do something for you to help you process some of these very ugly memories?
Yeah, I think first and foremost, I think just when I came back, you know, as most veterans back from any war, well, especially this one, since it's an all-volunteer force, you know, you just have these, you have this, you know, to say the least, it's a very strange, bizarre experience to be over there, and then to come back into America, and kind of, you know, no one's really talking about it much, and a lot of people don't know how to talk about it, and so you have these memories and this year, maybe even more than a year, multiple deployments for some guys, and you have, it's hard to sort of explain what it was like to people, and you're constantly getting questions as to, you know, what was it like over there, how are things going? And so for me, it's therapeutic in a way to write poems that are based on the experiences and based on my memories and to sort of get them out into the world. And, you know, I don't know how many people read them or if just maybe a couple people read them or if no one reads them, but it does feel good for me to sort of put that stuff out in the world and have it there so people can kind of look at it in the light and hopefully get a better, deeper understanding of maybe what it's like to be a soldier, what it's like to be an Iraqi, and what this war specifically is like. So,
I think about the many, many soldiers who served in World War II, and of course there has been some amazing writing that has come from those soldiers. But so many of them stayed silent, and that's a story that you hear again and again in families because somebody saw such horrible things and they couldn't talk about them. And, you know, your great Uncle Johnny never talked about it, but he drank a lot. And, mm-hmm. you know, I wonder if you think about those people that can't express their experiences, can't talk about it when you write.
Yeah, definitely. And I do think, you know, because there's a lot of friends I came back with who, and I really think it's just, I don't want to generalize anything or anyone, but I think a lot of it is based on their personality. And there's a few guys I came with after Iraq, I came back with, I'm sorry, and they kind of don't understand why I would write about it and why I would bring that up. They say something like, well, that happened in the past, like, why don't you forget about it? And why, you know, just get over it, basically, and move on and things like that. And, you know, why does it need to be talked about? And I think that's fine. And some guys, you know, maybe it's too difficult for them to talk about, and they do want to kind of forget it. But I think it's just based on how they feel and their personality. And, you know, in a way, I never want to say I'm speaking for those who aren't able to speak, but I do know that, you know, most guys I went, just from my experience, they're not interested in writing. They're not really interested in communicating or telling these stories from over there. And so I am, and I know there's an audience for war, for literature about the war, for writing about the war. And I think, you know, I hope that these poems that I wrote, when they're out there in the world, if other veterans see them who maybe don't want to talk about their experiences or don't like to, I just really sincerely hope that these poems maybe ring true to them, and they say, you know, yes, that's how it was, or yes, I could see this happening, or I remember something like this happening. So I hope I hope they can empathize with what I'm saying and sympathize with it. They say, yes, you know, that's how it was. So
I'm talking with poet Hugh Martin. His work is featured in the most recent issue of the Iowa Review. We'll continue our conversation in a moment. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're exploring the creative endeavors of veterans as they draw on their military experience in writing or music. We'll get to music a little later this hour. With me right now is poet Hugh Martin. He is the author of the new poetry collection, The Stick Soldiers. His work was also just featured in the latest issue of the Iowa Review. He's the Jeff Charlotte Memorial Award winner from the Iowa Review. He also blogs at hugh-martin.com. And with me now also is Randy Brown. He's a former newspaper and magazine editor. He's a freelance writer in central Iowa, and he blogs about military topics under the pseudonym Charlie Sherpa at redbullrising.com. Hello, Randy.
Hello.
Thank you so much for being here today. And your biography is a little confusing, so I'm going to let you tell us a little bit about yourself instead of trying to figure it and untangle all the threads myself. But in a just a couple of sentences, try to sum up military experience.
I've been trying to do that for years. I graduated high school from Davenport, Iowa. I went to school at Drake University, journalism school. I swore that I would leave the state of Iowa, and I found myself coming back. I joined the Iowa Army National Guard during Operation Desert Storm. I went to school for my country at that point. I spent the next 20 years in the Iowa Army National Guard while on the civilian side being a journalist, a newspaper and magazine editor. I deployed under Operation Enduring Freedom orders to a peacekeeping mission in Egypt in 2003. The joke is that I have a combat patch for peacekeeping duty. I like to think that kind of speaks to the duality of man. Then in 2008 and 9, my family and I began to prepare for a deployment to Afghanistan with a large group of Iowa Army National Guard soldiers, 3,000 of them going to Afghanistan. At the last minute, a couple weeks before we were federalized, somebody detected something in my paperwork that was going to force me to retire when in Afghanistan. Since you can't do that, I found myself waving goodbye to all of my my buddies. And having been through all the training and had all the experiences save for actually getting in country and on the ground, I promised my my former commander that I would come visit him in Afghanistan. So I went ahead and embedded then as a civilian journalist in May and June of 2011.
Did you do that as a freelancer, or did you go for a specific newspaper organization?
I did that as a freelancer, and because of my many bylines and identities, I actually wrote a letter to the Army saying that I was sending myself to Afghanistan. So that's how I got there.
Well, and this drives home the point that although you have been through deployment, not everyone in the military has been through combat experience, but combat is not the only part of military experience that is quite foreign to civilian life and can really shape and change you.
That's right. Number one, I get a little nervous whenever somebody uses the qualifier combat because everybody serves. In the military, we talk about the tooth-to-tail ratio. And yes, the guys and gals on the front, if there is a front, the war fighter, if you want to call it that, are the people who experience, you know, traumatic experiences daily. On the other hand, there are some traumatic and intense experiences that can occur for medical personnel who aren't necessarily right there when the bullets fly. There are some intense experiences that can happen even when the bullets and bombs aren't going off, just with accidents. You know, everything is a risk. And when you move when you move 3,000 people, you know, the town of Osceola, where I was a community newspaperman, was about 3,000 people at the time. So I liken it to the Iowa Army National Guard moved people and things, the equivalent of Osceola, Iowa, halfway around the world. You know, that ripple effect on the communities across the state, you know, those families and friends who experienced that loss, those two are experiences with the military. So I try to really talk about this topic in the sense of what is your experience, regardless of whether you actually wore a uniform, with the military.
Well, I was reading on your blog last night, and you write quite a bit about the experience of those who are left at home when a loved one is deployed and how challenging that is, but also how, you know, people say, let us know what we can do for you.
Right.
But that actually gives the person who's left behind one more task to do.
Yes. And in fact, you know, it's not sufficient to say oftentimes, what can I do, or let us know. It's really a matter of being that type of friend or family member who actually goes and does something for that individual and in support of the family, that sometimes people don't know when to ask or how to ask, even when the offer is there and open. And oftentimes, unfortunately, or fortunately or unfortunately, you know, many well-meaning people say the words but don't follow through. You know, they talk the talk but don't walk the walk. And that's in a similar way, that's why veterans have sort of current service members have kind of an uneasy relationship to the words, thank you for your service, because we're not always sure how to react to that. That seems – it can seem trite. It can seem automatic. And, you know, what are you supposed to say to that?
Well, and let's talk about Memorial Day, because you and Hugh both have a piece about Memorial Day. And I would love first, Randy, for you to read – for us from your piece that talks about Memorial Day. And then, Hugh, in just a couple of minutes, I'll have you do the same. But, Randy, tell us where this piece comes from.
This was an excerpt from an op-ed piece, a newspaper essay that I wrote for the Iowa City Press Citizen last year around Memorial Day. It's called Remember the Names, Tell Their Stories. I joined the Iowa Army National Guard because I wanted to serve God, country, and community. What I didn't realize was that, in addition to paying for my education and giving me a part-time and sometimes full-time job, I'd receive a lifetime of war stories in return. In 2010, I prepared to deploy with 3,000 Iowans of the 2nd Brigade Combat Team, 34th Infantry Division, also known as the Red Bull. It was the largest deployment of Iowa National Guard troops since World War II. Paperwork got in the way of my deployment, but I went later as a civilian reporter. That, too, makes for a good story. Middle-aged Midwestern boy meets Afghan deployment. Boy loses deployment. Boy goes to Afghanistan anyway. Some war stories I tell to entertain or educate others. Some of them I don't tell at all. Sometimes I change the names, especially on the goofy ones. Sometimes, however, the names are the essential part of the story. Sergeant Brent Mayer, 31, of Honey Creek, was killed April 11, 2011, in Paktia Province when an improvised explosive device detonated under the armored vehicle in which he was positioned as gunner. Specialist Donald Nichols, 21, of Shell Rock, was killed April 13, 2001, in Logman Province. An IED detonated under the vehicle in which he was traveling. Staff Sergeant James Justice, 32, of Grimes, Iowa, was killed April 23, 2011, by small arms fire in Capisa Province. He was part of a hastily dispatched mission to secure the position of a downed U.S. attack helicopter. Sergeant First Class Terrell Pasker, 39, of Cedar Rapids, was killed July 10, 2011. A rogue Afghan security officer attacked him at a makeshift traffic stop at Panjshir Province. People don't have to visit a cemetery to celebrate the lives and sacrifices of our citizen soldiers, nor should they forget the friends and families who bear scars and burdens long after the trumpets play. They do, however, have to remember. And people can't remember if we don't talk about the fallen. We have to say the names. We have to tell their stories. The 2012 feature film Memorial Day tells the story of a Minnesota boy who confronts his grandfather with a dusty World War II footlocker, one that is filled with souvenirs. Actor James Cromwell's character tells the 13-year-old Kyle, "I didn't loot, and I didn't steal. I collected things that would help me remember." Me? I collect stories. That fictional little boy grows up to wear the same 34th Division Red Bull patch currently worn by many Minnesota and Iowa National Guard soldiers. Like thousands of other Midwestern veterans and citizen soldiers, I proudly wore that patch on my shoulder. So did Mayer, Nichols, Justice, and Pasker. After I retired, I packed my own footlocker after my wife asked me to rid the house of my surplus Army baggage. Into a single government-issue box, I put 20 years of uniforms and boots, along with patches, pins, and other paraphernalia. One day, I'll tell my kids about what's inside. I will tell them about the Red Bull. I will tell them about giving back and putting your life on hold to serve country and community. I'll tell them about making each day count and about never taking anything for granted, especially coming home.
Randy Brown, reading from an op-ed piece he wrote for the Iowa City Press Citizen. Randy Brown blogs at redbullrising.com. Poet Hugh Martin is also still with us. And before we start talking about Memorial Day and that piece, Randy, I want, Hugh, can you read your poem called Memorial Day as well?
Yeah, sure. Memorial Day. Thank you for the yellow magnet on your vehicle. My lifetime membership to the Veterans of Foreign Wars put me back $300. Gentlemen's clubs wave my cover, shake my hand. I'm a veteran. Support me. Thank me. Please applaud when I enter the airport. When I told my mother I had to go, I cried hard. In my heyday, I could bench 250. Yes, to bacon on everything. I can be buried at Arlington whenever. Applebee's served me for free with tipped tax. God, that girl can sing. Chew that hot dog. Hold in that fart. Smile. Put your hand on your heart.
Hugh Martin reading his poem, Memorial Day. And Randy, before you started reading yours, you mentioned that a lot of veterans have an uneasy relationship with people who come up and say thank you for your service. And Hugh, in listening to that poem, I heard some of that uneasy relationship. Tell me where that poem comes from. What is the feeling that you struggle with when we pause for a day to honor our veterans?
Well, and you know, honestly, these poems, that's a persona poem. You know, it's obviously a very mean poem. There's anger behind it. And, you know, it's, as far as me personally, I don't always feel this way, but sometimes I do, and I'm sure other veterans do, but it's very ironic and kind of, it's just that when you come home, I think, especially with these wars, since it's an all-volunteer force, you know, the only things you see related to the war are maybe some yellow magnets on vehicles, and maybe you get some perks like getting into Applebee's and getting a meal. And it's just it's so bizarre, because you know you've gone overseas and served in this war, and you come back and it's like, okay, well, I get a free Applebee's meal. And it's just I can't even wrap my head around it sometimes, because it's so strange to just get something like that for fighting in a war overseas and being gone for a year. And the thing is, you know, I think about Wilfred Owen a lot, and he talks about during trench warfare and how detached people back in England were, and he has some very sarcastic, mean poems about that, like Dog Day at the Cormest and things like that. And so I think my poem is kind of fueled from some of Wilfred Owen's work. But, you know, my thing would be that I think just coming back, the war was not during those 10 years, and even now, it just was never, if you watch TV, if you go on the internet, really, if you're just out and about doing anything, it's really not on people's minds, and they don't care about it. And it sounds kind of selfish and greedy to say, well, you should care about the war. I don't want to be like that. But the thing is, I just wish that during the last 10 years, more people knew, you know, how many soldiers died, how many Iraqis died. And also, on top of the soldiers' perspective, you know, how the Iraqis really, you know, this happened in their front yards, and these horrible things were going on. And I just didn't see a lot of sympathy for the Iraqis. And so this poem kind of comes out of that, and comes out of the sort of meaningless motions people go through to, you know, they put down their hot dog at the national anthem and they'll sing along, and then they'll go back to whatever they're doing. There's kind of really no deep thought or reflection put into what happens to the, you know, millions of people who went over to fight, and the billions of Iraqis who were affected, and Afghanis and things like that. So that's where this poem kind of comes out of for me. So,
well, Randy, can you shed some light as well on that uneasy feeling that so many veterans get when they're thanked for their service?
Well, you know, I'm struck by the fact that, you know, I had an English professor friend of mine tell me that there are only two stories in literature. One is a hero leaves on a journey. And the second one is a stranger comes to town. And the whole, you know, reintegration, coming home that a service member goes through, you know, he or she is kind of a time traveler and a space traveler, in the sense that they've gone and they've seen things and had experiences, and, you know, life has gone on without them. They come back, and it is a foreign terrain to them, a foreign landscape, even though, you know, they are the same person who left. It's taken me a couple of years to realize that homecoming is really a journey, not a destination. And it's a process not only for the veteran, but for the family and friends who receive that individual. And sometimes the times for conversation and recording experience aren't right away. You know, it's not just right off the bus. It's maybe months and years after the fact. Where I encourage veterans to kind of get things down on paper while the names and the memories are somewhat fresh, so that they can go back and start working with it. You know, it doesn't have to be poetry. It doesn't have to be a newspaper op-ed piece. But it does need to be something about them, for them, so that they can share it with their family and friends when they are ready, and when their family and friends are ready to have that discussion.
Hugh, you talked about the feeling that you put into your poems and your hope that when somebody reads it, they can empathize with what you or what the person in the poem is experiencing and feeling. Has that helped you help your family and people close to you understand what it was like? Because I think a lot of us really cannot fathom what it was like.
Yeah, they definitely, I don't want to say I write these poems so my mom and dad can pat me on the back, because I think I could write anything and my parents or family would say, oh, this is wonderful, you know, it could just be crap on the page. But, I know for certain, you know, a lot of my family and friends have read my book or read my poems, and most of them have said that not only they enjoy it, but that they've learned a lot from it, and they have a more nuanced perspective of what it's like to be a soldier, what it was like to be in Iraq, et cetera. So, that, like I was saying earlier, you know, that is sort of therapeutic for me to sort of get it off my chest. Just, I think it feels good to sort of get it in the dialogue and get the war in the dialogue and the conversations that people are having in this country. So.
We're going to take another short break. We'll be back to this conversation in a moment. We're talking about creative endeavors of veterans as they process their military experiences, writing about military experiences. With me is poet Hugh Martin, who spent 6 years in the Army National Guard and 11 months in Iraq. His work is featured in the most recent issue of the Iowa Review, and he's just published a full-length poetry collection called The Stick Soldiers. Also with me is Randy Brown. He's a former newspaper and magazine editor. He's a freelance writer in Central Iowa, and he blogs at redbullrising.com. Coming up in just a moment, we'll talk with singer-songwriter Lem Genovese. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, I'm talking with veterans who have written about their military experience or have expressed their military experience in other creative ways. With me, poet Hugh Martin. His work is featured in the most recent issue of the Iowa Review. He also blogs at hugh-martin.com. Randy Brown is with me. He blogs under the pseudonym Charlie Sherpa at redbullrising.com. And now we've been talking a lot about writing, so we're going to talk about a different kind of writing with singer-songwriter Lem Genovese. He served for 20 years in the U.S. Army and the Iowa Army National Guard. He also served in Vietnam and the Gulf War. He is a retired Army combat field medic of 17 years. And you can find out more about him and his music at yankeemedicrecords.com. Hello, Lem.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for being here today.
No, it's a real privilege to be back on IPR.
Tell me, when did you join the military?
Pterodactyls flew. there was no such thing as computers that you could actually move around by yourself in 1970. So my draft number was 10. I had 2 years of college, and with that number, I figured the way the war was going, and we're talking about Vietnam, probably now we might as well be talking about the American Civil War. But I still believe that, I enlisted so I wouldn't get pulled out of a draft line by the Marines. And no disrespect to the Marines, but I got to Vietnam late. It had been going on since 1965. And then after I got back from Vietnam in January of 1972, I took a 12-year break in service just to try and heal up from what I'd experienced in Vietnam, and went to the University of Iowa on the GI Bill. And then in 1986, I shaved the beard and the long hair off, put the uniform back on, and made a commitment that I still had some unfinished business serving my country.
What made you make that decision? Why did you go back to the military?
Well, I was a journalist and a singer-songwriter when I left the University of Iowa in 1975. And by 1986, this country had pretty much done everything I believed it needed to do to take care of the non-vets as best it could. There's a big caveat with that, but by the same token, on a personal level, I really felt like, you know what, I still got some gas left in this tank. And I really felt like I owed it to this country because of just my personal sense of obligation that I could still make a pretty good soldier. And my heroes were the medics of Vietnam, both the Navy corpsmen and the Army medics. And through my touring as a musician, I got to talk to several of them nationwide. and they just seem to really exude this quiet sense of compassion and humanity in the middle of the insanity, as I like to refer to it. So that's why I put the uniform back on and became a medic. And for 17 years, I tried to teach kids the mental aspect of mental toughness to prepare themselves for a combat zone.
Were you already a musician when you enlisted?
Yeah, I had some small little duos and trios at Grandview College in Des Moines from 1968 to 1970. So, yeah.
Did you make music while you were serving?
Yes, I did. Surprisingly enough, we had my best buddy, who's still my best buddy from Vietnam, was my best man at my wedding. He and I formed a little duo, and when we could, we'd jam. Back then, I was just playing bongos and trying to learn how to play blues harmonica, which I have a whole chapter on in my my memoir, The Tunesmith Chronicles. And I was lucky enough to be at an Army Air Base helicopter and fixed wing in the Mekong Delta, and they had a USO service club, so you could borrow their music gear, instruments, and so forth. And so one night was soul, one night was jazz, one night was country, one night was country rock, one night was straight rock and roll. And the few nights I could get off, because I usually worked, the first 6 months I was there, I worked about 18 hours a day. So I got to sit in with a little bit of everything, and it really opened me up to appreciating how tough it was to be a decent musician. But at the same time, it was great therapy for me.
You continued when you got back, and you still do perform music that is inspired by your military service. Why do you think that this is the theme that keeps coming back to you again and again?
Well, I there was a time before the Gulf War where I thought, you know what, maybe this country's turned the corner. Maybe I don't need to write about the military and veterans and military families anymore. And then after the Gulf War, I saw the writing on the wall. We had so much unfinished business. I was fortunate enough with the 209th out of Iowa City to rub elbows with some highly skilled, highly professional officers and senior NCOs. And a lot of them were, a lot of the guys I talked to obviously were non-vets because of that affinity that we, in the Army, you would have patches on the right sleeve for combat. And the ones from Vietnam, and especially 1990, they stuck out like sore thumbs. So the consensus was we were going to have to go back in and get rid of Saddam sooner or later. And there's also, if folks understand that there's a sect of the Muslim faith called the Wahhabi, and they took great offense to having infidel troops in the Holy Land of the nation of the Kingdom of Saud in Saudi Arabia. So I sort of saw the handwriting on the wall that the Middle East was going to be a ongoing process. And that's when it sort of kicked back in that we were going to have another generation of veterans fighting in Iraq and Afghanistan. I saw that just as clear as day when I got back in 1991.
And that made you want to write more songs for them?
Yeah, absolutely. It's the same thing that I was into veterans advocacy, as well as being a writer and a journalist back in the 70s and the 80s. And we got to veterans are veterans, and the ones that are open to a younger generation tried to steer those of us who were trying to make a difference to get like a better GI Bill, to get the Vet Center program, and get PTSD recognized. This is all in my book. Those World War II and Korean vets were my mentors. And so I'm sort of continuing a tradition that this nation's military heritage has had since the American Revolution, that one generation will try its best to mentor the next, the younger generation, so they don't make the same mistakes and readjustment when they get back.
Let's listen to a little bit of one of your songs so people can have an understanding of,
sure,
of what you do. We're going to listen to Cruisin' on This Groove. Can you tell us a little bit about it?
Well, that's the one I wrote for my wife. Now, for those of you that remember Desert Storm, mail was a real big issue for us. They had a huge backlog. But while I was at Fort McCoy. My roommate put an ad in the La Crosse Tribune for Desert Storm Pen Pals between the ages of about 25 and 35 or 40. He got 18 responses, and one of them was a 6-foot-tall nurse practitioner. And he was 5'7". He said, "Here, Lem, this one's for you." And that's and Nancy Rao became my Desert Storm pen pal. And through our letters, we hit it off so well, we dated that summer of 91, and we got married the following August of 92.
Oh, wonderful. Well, let's listen to a little bit of the song.
And this is the song I wrote for the wedding for her. This is my wedding gift to her.
Okay.
This may sound like the movies. We swear it's unvarnished truth. Our friendship forged in the fires. Our marriage, a final proof. We're heading for the big leagues, gripping it by the seams. Better live than never. It's our shot. Is covered. It's time to make our move. And it looks like extra innings. Or we're cruising on this groove.
All right, a little bit of cruising on this groove. Lem Genovese. You can find out more about him on his website, yankeemedicrecords.com. And listening to Lem talk about how he felt a responsibility to the next generation of veterans, Randy, it makes me wonder about you, because clearly you're a man who has a great deal of writing ability. You are a good speaker, a good communicator. Do you feel you sent yourself to Afghanistan to write about what was going on there when your deployment fell through? Do you feel some sort of responsibility to be the storyteller, because that's the skill that you have for all of these men and women who can't tell their stories?
The short answer is yes. I remember about 3 to 4 years old playing little 3-inch reel-to-reel tapes of my father, who was deployed to Vietnam as a navigator on a C-130. And we exchanged the technology of the day. We exchanged audio tapes. And, you know, I have to imagine what it must have been like to hear my voice for the first time in that way. And that was very much on my mind as I prepared my family and myself to go to Afghanistan. And I wanted to write the experience so that when my kids, who were then 5 and 3, so I could explain to them what was so gosh darn important that Daddy left for an entire year of their young lives. When I didn't go, I suddenly found myself in the position of needing to write for other people's children and other people's families. And in fact, the big cosmic joke was I started to blog for various reasons, but one of the reasons was, I thought I'd amuse my buddies. And instead I found, because I was writing as under a pseudonym, that Sherpa wasn't writing necessarily for his buddies. In fact, his buddies really didn't even know that they were being written about, also pseudonymously. But I was writing for their families. And I was getting mail from spouses and children and grandfathers and grandmothers saying, "Thank you for explaining what's on my service member's mind right now as he or she is preparing to go to war." And now hopefully I'm also doing that as those service members try to reintegrate and become veterans.
Hughes, is there a certain level of responsibility that you feel as a man who can tell these stories?
Yeah, I feel, very similar to kind of what you were saying. But with mine's a little different, I think, just because I am writing poetry and I'm doing a lot of persona stuff and things like that. And it's, I don't know if I'm, like, helping veterans coming back as much as these two gentlemen are. But I think my work more as writing poetry and things like that is to kind of maybe push through those taboos and those quote-unquote sacred maybe rituals that are a part of the military or that are part of civilian life in America and a part of, like, the unspoken rules of being a soldier. And I'm always trying to kind of push the envelope and kind of see what we can find in the dark there when it comes to war and soldiering and that homecoming that Randy was talking about, which is just basically the story of Odysseus and the Odyssey and the things like that. So, I just hope that I feel I have a responsibility to always try to tell the truth and have humanity in whether it's Iraqis or whether it's soldiers or civilians, things like that.
Lem, you've been at this a long time. In all of the performing that you've done, all the veterans that you've talked to, all of the service members that you talk to, what gives you the best sense of accomplishment? What makes you feel like what you're doing is worthwhile?
When I see the family members, as a musician, definitely the family members come up and shake my hand, hug me, thank me for writing the songs. I usually, on some of the more important ones, I give a little explanation as an introduction. So I think that's it. It's the family members as much as the veterans themselves. Probably, I think, more so, because I think the pressures on military families are such that the average American that does not have a member of the military or a veteran in their family just don't have the same perspective. I just jotted some things down about a veteran's perspective can get so deep into it that even a moonless, overcast midnight is too bright. And it's really, you touched on it, and Randy did too. It's the family members are so important, and these are the folks in particular that really need this information and need to have some kind of an emotional bond. And so to have that kind of feedback when I get done performing is priceless to me.
Lem, a little earlier, Hugh was talking about how it doesn't feel like people have paid much attention to the wars over the years, the recent years. And as a nation, we haven't had to sacrifice. Individuals haven't been called on to sacrifice like Americans were in World War II. How do you feel about how the public views military service today?
I think the perspective that I have is a little different, because I came from a generation where we were vilified. We were the scapegoats for a very unpopular and controversial war. At least now the consensus of this nation has turned around. The question is whether the will is there to take care of those who are troubled by post-traumatic stress disorder, traumatic brain injury, military sexual trauma, and to make sure that the benefits are there, both for the Department of Veterans Affairs for our wounded and the GI Bill, so we can improve the future of our military veterans. So I think that it's going to be more important to continually press the news media in particular to make sure they pay attention to the crises that we're having right now. And I don't expect the American public, because of that detachment that they have and have had since World War II, to really have a national movement anywhere near. I look at World War II now as an aberration, because it was a true global war, and we were fighting in two spheres of this planet. We were in the Atlantic and the Pacific. And what we're dealing with now is wars of counterinsurgency. I don't care what, the politicians want to spin on it and call it nation building, but call it what it is. It's wars of counterinsurgency. And those are completely different. They're very complex. You have so many issues that the average American sort of turns off because it is so difficult to process.
Well, and Lem, I'm afraid we're going to have to leave it there because we are out of time. Thank you so much for being with us today. Singer-songwriter Lem Genovese. You can find out more about his music at yankeemedicrecords.com. He's the author of The Tunesmith Chronicles, a musical history tour. And Randy Brown, thank you so much for being here today.
Certainly.
Randy Brown blogs at redbullrising.com under the pseudonym Charlie Sherpa. And Hugh Martin, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Poet Hugh Martin, he's just published a new poetry collection called The Stick Soldiers. Talk of Iowa is produced by Ben Stanton, Dennis Reese, Emily Woodbury, and Sarah Bowden. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. Talk of Iowa is a production of Iowa Public Radio News.